This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, an interesting event yesterday. The TV show Rising Star came to a conclusion.
Yeah,
and the Rising Star is a reality singing competition, which the winner will represent Israel at the next Eurovision Song Contest. And the winner this year is Yuval Rafael. She is 24 years old and she's from Ra'anana. And for Yuval, it's something of a circle being completed because Yuval is a survivor of the Nova Music Festival. She was one of those who ran to what are now being called theft shelters, which is essentially shelters that many of the members of the Nova Festival, many of the participants at Nova, ran to in order to hide away from the attack, the massacre that took place on October the 7th. And Yuval told her story in Geneva to a UN committee. She traveled to Geneva in March to tell her story. And she explained that she hid in the far corner of a public bomb shelter, which was just outside of Kibbutz Be'eri. She was there with about 50 other festival attendees. And she then went on to say that she was trapped underneath the body of a dead person, a young woman, for 8 hours, herself pretending to be dead in order to survive. And in her words, "I can't explain how heavy a body becomes when it is dead." Those were the words of Yuval Rafael. In the end, out of the 50 people who were in that shelter with her, only 12 managed to come out alive. And one of them, Yuval Rafael, will travel to Switzerland in May to represent Israel at the Eurovision Song Contest. Now, I think that that's quite an experience for her to have gone through. And she was really excited to be able to represent Israel, which I think will have a little bit of a different meaning for her especially, but potentially for all of us when we know what she's been through and how she's come out of this to win the competition and to go out to represent Israel at Eurovision, which I know is not one of those song competitions that we all think is a great technical masterpiece, but it is certainly something that's very much in the public eye, very visible, and Yuval will be our representative.
And very, it'll be very interesting because if there's any protesters, I mean, here's a woman who lay under bodies for 8 hours in order to survive a terror attack. So very, it's a very significant. We actually played her winning song for our listeners earlier. I thought it was absolutely outstanding. Really, really just brilliant. Let's talk about, this story bothered me a little bit, but I wanted to hear a bit more. I saw that the Knesset yesterday voted against setting up a state commission of inquiry into the events of October the 7th. Does this mean that there's not going to be an investigation?
Well, there will be an investigation and there are investigations ongoing. And this story ties into a number of other stories that are going on all at the same time. So this Knesset vote that took place yesterday, which was defeated by 53 votes to 45, 53 people voting against the bill, says that there will not be a state commission of inquiry, which is sort of the highest, the most powerful commission that can be set up in Israel. And the reason, I believe, that it was voted against is because this is an entirely independent commission under the auspices of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Israel. He is the one who appoints the commission, And this commission has the power to subpoena witnesses and to make personal recommendations against individuals. So in the first instance, this is the governing coalition expressing a vote of no confidence in the High Court of Justice, and in particular in the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. That's first of all. Second of all, I think that this is also the Knesset saying we're a little nervous about losing control over what might go down at that public commission of inquiry, at the state commission of inquiry. And we're also a little nervous about what personal recommendations might be made regarding certain individuals. There are people, not one or two, quite a number of people, who feel that, for example, the Prime Minister should be subpoenaed and should potentially be, his actions should be examined alongside those of the Minister of Defense at the time, and potentially other senior government officials as well. I think members of the government are quite loath to submit the governing elected officials at that time to this inquiry, particularly the governing coalition is trying to protect the Prime Minister and other members of the cabinet. And so the Knesset ultimately voted against the appointment of a state commission of inquiry. They do say that there may well be another type of investigation, a parliamentary investigation or a government investigation into the events of October the 7th. And it's interesting that one of the reasons that was given for the governing coalition to vote against the state commission of inquiry is because they say that there is lack of public trust in the Supreme Court, and therefore it should not be given the power to appoint the committee members. It's also interesting to note that recent polls have indicated that something like 70% of Israelis actually do support a state commission of inquiry. And there is already some sort of an attempt at the public level to raise up a petition in order to demand that a state commission of inquiry be set up for this purpose. And it ties into another story, which is the resignation that was received by the Minister of Defense of the IDF Chief of General Staff, Herzi Halevi. He, the day before yesterday, submitted his resignation, which is due to take effect in about 6 weeks' time from now. And Herzi Halevi has served as the Chief of General Staff for less than the regular three-year period that the Chief of General Staff is appointed for. And as part of his resignation, he wrote that he wishes to take personal responsibility for the failures on October the 7th. And he says that this is something that will live with him for the rest of his life. But we understand that behind the scenes, there was quite a harsh exchange of words between the Chief of General Staff and the Minister of Defense, Yisrael Katz. Yisrael Katz trying to encourage the army to complete its internal investigation into events of October the 7th, and Yisrael Katz, Minister of Defense, telling the Chief of General Staff that he will not approve any promotions in rank or promotions in job within the IDF, within the senior ranks of the IDF, until this investigation has been completed. Now, I know that the IDF has already initiated its investigation some time ago, and some of the recommendations already have been made, but it was interesting that alongside the resignation of the Chief of General Staff came the resignation of the commander of the Southern Brigade, which is Yaron Finkelman, who also said that he feels personally responsible for some of the events that took place on October the 7th, and he too has resigned his position. Now, I think on the one hand that it's honorable that people resign and take responsibility. I think that many people feel that that's not necessarily the best possible way, because in a way they kind of escape from being investigated and their failures being laid open to public scrutiny. They resign, they leave with certain dignity and honor and probably pension payments and things that go along with that, as opposed to a state commission of inquiry, which could recommend that they be fired. And if they are fired as a result of their failures, then they would not be entitled to the same benefits and pensions and things like that. So there is a little nuance in all of this. I think ultimately, though, that the people of Israel believe that the highest possible independent investigation is required, and that means a State Commission of Inquiry. And it would be very surprising to me if this was the final word on the debate over a State Commission of Inquiry. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, up until now, we've said we've been busy fighting fires and fighting wars on our borders, and it hasn't been the time to think about investigations and potential recriminations. But I think we're getting much, much closer to that moment when the time will be right for us to take a step back and to really investigate fully what happened, to hold those responsible for those, hold those people responsible for any failures that took place, and most importantly, to learn lessons for the future, because without a proper investigation, we unfortunately roll forward without learning lessons.
100%. Let's just talk about stage two of the ceasefire agreement. Apparently work has begun to prepare for stage two. What does that involve?
Well, even before we get to stage two, there's a little bit of a debate going on at the moment about the next moment of hostage release, which is due to take place on Shabbat. And we understand from Hamas that they intend to free 4 female hostages. Israel is insisting that Arbel Yehud be one of those hostages to be freed. She is a civilian female hostage who is therefore in the highest possible category. She should be first on the list, along with Shiri Bibas, the mother of those two young boys, Ariel and Kfir. Those are the two only female civilians still in captivity. We fear very much for the life of Shiri, and we have no confirmation that she is still alive or that her sons are still alive. As to Arbel, we believe that she is alive, but the problem is that she, we believe, is being held by Palestinian Islamic Jihad as opposed to Hamas. And therefore, because of that little kink in the situation where she's not actually under the direct control of Hamas, there is the possibility that she may not be released on Saturday. And the Israeli authorities are very much concerned that she won't be released and are insisting that she should be released along with the 3 other female hostages, whoever they are. And of course, let's remember that we have 5 IDF soldiers, female IDF soldiers, Liri, Karina, Agam, Danielle, and Naama. They are all still in captivity, 19, 20, 21 years old, all of those ladies, all of those young girls. And so there is some concern about what will go on Saturday and who will be released. The names should be already made public tomorrow, but we still don't know who that's going to be. As a, with regard to the second phase, it's interesting that President Isaac Herzog has met with the Qatari Prime Minister in Davos. And the, first of all, President Herzog thanked the Qatari Prime Minister for the work that Qatar has done to assist with coming to this agreement. And the Qatari Prime Minister has apparently already contacted the head of the Shin Bet and the head of the Mossad to try to meet in Egypt already sometime during next week, which is before the 16th day when the discussions on the second phase were due to have begun. Now, the second phase is considered to be highly problematic and very, very controversial. It will also involve Steve Witkoff, who has now been appointed as US President Donald Trump's Middle East envoy. And Steve already was involved in events leading up to the current hostage release, and he's very much involved as well in discussing the next stage. So it seems as if though those discussions may well already begin on Wednesday next week in Egypt, which is something like 2 weeks ahead of the actual scheduled date for the start of this discussion. For phase two, one of the requirements is that Hamas is removed from power in Gaza. And if you're asking me, I'm very, very much pessimistic about coming to that kind of an agreement. I don't exactly know who on the Palestinian side they will be talking to about removing Hamas from power in Gaza and how that will work out. But I'm suspecting that that is going to be a tough discussion to hold. And as I say, I'm relatively pessimistic about the possibility that that will be, will be successful ultimately. But I guess we will watch the space and see.
Yeah, it certainly will be a place to watch. The ceasefire continues to hold in Gaza and Lebanon, but we are hearing about IDF activities. What does this mean?
Well, Lebanon, the situation is unclear at the moment because the 60 days that the IDF undertook to leave Lebanon, the period within which the IDF undertook to leave Lebanon, is due to come up next week. And I think that Israel already formally advised the ceasefire committee that they would be extending their stay in Lebanon beyond the 60 days. There have been discussions around that, whether they will or they will not. The Lebanese government has now been put in place over that 60-day period. A new Lebanese president was elected, and he in turn has appointed a new prime minister. Very interestingly, for those who like to play joining the dots, the new Lebanese prime minister is also the person who was the head of the judicial panel at the International Court of Justice that heard South Africa's case against Israel. There was a Lebanese judge on the panel. He took over from the American lady as the head of the panel, and he is now the new prime minister of Lebanon. Very fascinating indeed. So the new government has been appointed, and they have already said that Israel will not be welcome to stay beyond the 60 days. There have been IDF activities in Lebanon because of the fact that the IDF is contending that the Lebanese side are not adhering to their agreement, which means that Hezbollah do not come into the area south of the Litani River on Israel's border at all. The IDF are claiming that there have been Hezbollah activities in that area and have operated accordingly. In Gaza, there has been massive return of Gazan displaced people to their homes or to what's left of their homes or what's not left of their homes. And that's been relatively well documented with lots and lots of social media pictures and videos coming out showing that activity. So the activities in Gaza are relatively low key for the IDF, even though IDF soldiers do remain in Gaza. But the latest uptick in activity has come in Jenin, where the IDF have been operating for the last week or so against Hamas terrorists. And interestingly, part of those activities have also been in cooperation with security forces from the Palestinian Authority, who are the ones who originally went into Jenin and opened up the gap. IDF soldiers have come in since then. There have been a lot of activities with people killed, terrorists killed in Jenin. It couldn't get much closer to the heart of Israel than that. That's a relatively, it's a step much, much closer to central Israel. So the IDF is still very much active and, of course, holding positions in other parts as well.
That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, thank you for an incredible week of reporting. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.